And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive. Can I take these off? All right. What is this? This looks good. Wow. That's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Welcome to Creating a Family. Talk about adoption and infertility. Today, we're going to be talking about helping our kids cope with bullies at school. This is a relevant topic this time of year, since most of our children are either have begun, are beginning, or will begin school very shortly. I think this show was great. I think you will as well. Here's a sample of what you're going to hear.
I like to let the kids brainstorm and test out ideas on their own, thinking about what they can do, whether it is to enlist the help of a peer, to walk away and play somewhere else, if it's to talk to an adult about it, I want them to talk through how they handled it, how the people around them handled it, how they wish it had been handled, and what they would do or want done differently in the future.
I'm Dawn Davenport. I'm the director of Creating a Family. We are the National Adoption and Infertility Education and Support Nonprofit. You can find us online at creatingafamily.org. Did you know that Creating a Family has an online parent adoption education center? Well, we do. We have 100-some-odd courses as well as packages. They are 1 hour. They are audio. You can download them to your phone or you can listen to them on your computer. They come with certificates of completion. We have a couple of packages, one for domestic adoption, one for international adoption, but we also have, like I said, over 100 courses that are being offered individually for parents for pre- and post-adoption education. You can get more information about that at our website, creatingafamily.org. You can go to the online courses tab, or you can go to the adoption tab and click on it from there. There's a number of different ways you can reach that center. The Creating a Family radio show is underwritten by our corporate sponsor, Ferring Pharmaceutical. If you're struggling with infertility, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. For comprehensive resources, including infertility information, treatment options, and ways to save, you can go to FerringFertility.com. This show, as well as all the resources provided by Creating a Family, could not happen without the generous support from our gold sponsors, who believe in our mission of providing unbiased education and support to those struggling to create a family. Some of our wonderful gold sponsors include Adoption Connection, a California-based adoption agency working with families throughout the United States. They are a national pioneer, or they were a national pioneer in open adoption, and they are respected for their ethical practices, compassion, and openness to adoptive and birth families of all types. We also have Hope International. Founded in 1956, they want every child to have a loving and secure home. They've been a leader in the global community in finding families for children who need them and for providing the pre- and post-adoption support they need to thrive. And Vista Del Mar. They are a licensed and accredited nonprofit adoption agency with over 65 years of experience helping to create families. They have 3 adoption programs, a private infant program, an international program, and an adoption through foster care program. Those will tell you about a few more of our gold sponsors later in the show. But in addition to those gold sponsors, we also have other sponsors whose generosity allows us to bring you this show. We ask that when choosing an adoption service provider, please consider choosing one from the Creating a Family directories, which you can find on the service provider page of our site. You can search by location, services provided, just a host of factors that we think are important when choosing. And by using these directories, you support those who support us, and we thank you. Today, we're going to be talking about helping our kids cope with bullies at school. Our guests to explore this topic are Brooke Randolph. She is a child and family therapist and author of a new book, The Bully Book, a workshop for kids coping with bullies. We also have Deborah Gish. She is a licensed clinical social worker with Adoption Connection with 20 years of experience working with kids and families. Welcome, Debbie and Brooke, to Creating a Family.
Thanks, Don. It's great to be back.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Right. Let's start at the beginning, which is always a good place to begin. Brooke, you just finished writing a book on this topic, so you're going to get the first one, which is, how do we define bullying? What is bullying?
Well, I would say that bullying would be an intense experience of dominance from one child to another. We'll keep it with children. And that may be dominance that is shown emotionally, physically, coercion, other kinds of ways that they take some sort of control and dominance in the relationship. However, what I found when I asked for some kids to review this book was that kids were able to take small instances, maybe not that long term that would create the intensity or something that was extreme in a single moment, but just an incident of teasing, and felt like they found some benefit in even working through the same things.
Well, you know, that raises a good question, and a question that came up when we, before the shows, every week we post on our online community, which, by the way, you can access. We've got a number of ways to access us online. We have the largest communities in adoption online. But one way to reach us is through our support group, which is a closed Facebook group. So you can find that at facebook.com/groups/creatingafamily, or just type in the words creating a family in the search box. So we posted about this, and it was an interesting discussion about bullying in general. So I'm going to we're trying to say, trying to kind of tease out the distinction between bullying and typical childhood cliquish type behaviors or even mean girl behaviors or the kidding around type of behaviors of most middle school boys. Here's a question that will lead us off. This is from Ian. He said, "My first grader's school has an aggressive anti-bullying curriculum, which is great, except that it may have made him a bit oversensitive. He has a hard time distinguishing between name-calling meant to bully and the kind of taunts that are a part and parcel of schoolyard games, like tag. For an example, he went to the teacher when a kid said, 'Nana, nana, nana, you can't catch me,' when they were playing tag." So he wants to know if our experts have any suggestions for helping his son distinguish between bullying and playful taunting. I was so thankful to get this question because I think as with anything, we want to be cognizant when it goes too far, but there's a certain amount of teasing or ribbing or just mean behavior that is a part of childhood. Debbie, can you help us think through ways how do we know when bullying rises to the level, or our behaviors rise to the level of bullying?
That's a good question, and maybe Brooke has more expertise in this, but I think when teasing tries to point out, you know, inherent vulnerabilities, like a disability or an identity or a racial thing, or things where they're really, as Brooke said, you know, pointing out a place of dominance or finger pointing to a place of weakness, then you're kind of crossing a line, I believe, in very hurtful, and can move into what can potentially develop into bullying. I don't know if a one-time incident, you know, in a schoolyard game is going to count as that, but there's a way that people seek out other people's vulnerabilities and can be very hurtful and have lasting effects.
Brooke, some thoughts on that, and does intent matter? The intent of the person who is doing the teasing or the silly behavioring or whatever?
Well, I think there's a couple different things going on here. I think in some cases that regardless of the intent, if a child is emotionally wounded, we want to attend to that. However, I certainly see what this father is saying about his child being hypersensitive as a result of the community and culture that is surrounding him, and trying to show this child kind of where the boundaries are and what the benefits are. I will say this is not something I've dealt with before. Most of the kids are, we're learning different kinds of social skills, but they don't seem to be that hypersensitive. So that would be a great way. I mean, I would just encourage him to keep talking to his son and building that up, and also, you know, letting them know these are things we will address, these are things we won't address, and maybe pointing out some times where he does those kinds of things to other people and see if the child can start to see the difference.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion, and we're going to be talking later in this hour about ways to handle bullying, and one way that in this, although I think clearly does not raise to the level of bullying or even close, can help his son, and know that a response to this, rather than going to the teacher and saying he called me a name, or teased me or taunted me or whatever, is to teach his son a response of, you know, no, you can't, and then run something.
Right.
So that he can, you know, that there's a that he has a response that, yeah. All right. Debbie, you mentioned something about, which was, I thought, such a good point about pointing out vulnerabilities, identity issues, racial issues, religious issues, disabilities, things like that, as well as adoption. That could possibly be one as well, or having been, or having being in foster care or something like that. But I think there are probably some others. So what type of children are at greater risk for bullying? You've mentioned a lot of them. In any others of children that stand that might have a tendency to be picked on in ways that would rise to the level of bullying?
Yeah, you know, it probably has to do with the child's perceived insecurities, the ways that they stand out from the majority group in whatever given context of their school, because each school has a school culture, a socioeconomic status, racial, et cetera. And so ways that children may, you know, be in a distinct minority or, and then there are some things about, go ahead.
Have you seen ways that adoption has played out where children are teased? It seems like adoption is so common now, and so many children have been. And have you seen times where children have been teased for having been adopted?
Well, one very interesting anecdote that happened in my own family is I have two children, two girls that are came to our family through adoption, and my sixth grade daughter came to me one day, and she's very comfortable in her skin around her adoption, and she said, "You know, Mom, the two biggest taunts at school that you can say to anyone is, oh, you're gay, or oh, you were adopted." And I was quite surprised by that, how easily that, whether or not adoption is talked about, it's a way to try to say you don't belong or you, I'm not completely sure all of the reasons why it's said, but it really is intended to be a jab to deep down into their identity. And people say it regardless of whether or not they know someone is adopted or not. They'll say it as a way to put them down or show them as different or not belonging.
Oh, that's such an interesting point. Yeah. And, I also wonder, not that these necessarily are more associated with adopted children, although they could be, delayed social skill development, kids who stand out, obviously, and kids on the autism spectrum, but children who stand out as different, and certainly sometimes children who have come from traumatic backgrounds often are delayed with social development, or delayed in other ways as well, and that those children might stand out as different and thus more vulnerable, perhaps. Yeah.
I'm also curious from Brooke of whether or not there's a propensity for children who have been bullied themselves to become bullies, that they're often insecure themselves, and they are the ones who want to find insecurities in other children. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Brooke.
Sure. It's very interesting. The manuscript for the book I actually wrote a decade ago, more than now, when working with an individual child on his experiences with being bullied, and also in using the book as a way to help him process how he was responding to it, and that he was actually returning some of that also. So there there is a little section of that in the book, in the how do I treat bullies and how am I responding and trying to get them to look at their own behavior.
Well, that raises that, – that's a perfect lead-in. Actually, Debbie did a better lead-in than I did. I was planning on it. Well, thank you, Debbie. why do children bully? And we got a question or a statement, actually, from Rianne. She says, bullying is learned behavior. If you look behind a bully, you will see bully parents. I actually don't agree with that, but I wanted to throw that out because I think what I'd like to explore why children bully. And we have another comment, but let's explore this one first. So, Brooke, what are your thoughts on Rianne's statement that bullying is a learned behavior, usually from parent to child?
Sometimes that's true. Sometimes kids use dominance and bullying for other reasons. They feel insecure, they can, and so they do. There's lots of different motivations.
Yeah, I think as well. And here's and then we have a question from Kelly that's appropriate at this point. She says, what to do if your child is the bully? What can you do to encourage empathy in a child so they don't turn into a bully or so they stop bullying other kids if they're already doing that? I don't think anyone sets out to raise a bully, but obviously this happens to some parents. And so, let's talk about that. Then I've got two anecdotes to share about that. But, yeah, thoughts on that, Debbie. If your child is the bully, what are some ways to help encourage empathy?
Yeah, I think that is the key question, is creating empathetic children. And being empathetic adults. I, too, have an antidote on that one. When I previously worked as a medical social worker, I was working with children with cranial facial anomalies and met with a girl who was born without an ear. And in the office, she was with a peer, a boy peer. And I'm like, oh, hi, who are you, and why are you here? And I assumed he was her brother, a friend or something, and it's like, this is my classmate. And he's been teasing me, and so my mom brought him with me to this appointment so that he can understand what it's like and what I go through. And I had a very interesting and open conversation with this boy about his own experience of being bullied around having asthma. And he was fairly awkward in the appointment, but this mother had the intervention of creating this empathetic environment where they spent the day together traveling to a doctor's appointment and learning. And I thought that was incredibly ingenious.
Yeah.
You know, it could backfire, but, you know, the parents obviously agreed to do it.
Well, and here's an anecdote from Debbie. She said, my now 17-year-old was a bully in fourth grade. We had an ice cream summit with the kids she bullied and their parents. Knowing that this behavior was seen by her family and dealt with made my daughter much more humble. She got the message that her behavior was unacceptable and it never happened again. And then I will share a personal anecdote from my family. One of my children, when he was 5 years old, and when I say this is out of context for him, it's certainly not a part of it. Truly wasn't. We were totally surprised. He had been threatening another little girl that was not in his class. I can't even remember now what it was he was saying, but this child was frightened, but she didn't know who it was. She didn't know my child because they weren't in the same class, but she knew what class. And the teacher and the principal went through every kid in the class because my kid would be the last one, the last boy, because she knew it was a boy, the last one they would thought. And then they got to him, and she said, yes, that's him. And, of course, we got a call from the school. I was as shocked as they were. And it was, you know, it was such a, of course, it was embarrassing. I was horrified. And, so it was what we did was we made him think about, of course, we talked to them. And then we said he needed to make restitution. He had to come up with a way to make her feel better. And And then when his only suggestion was baking cookies, which is one of his favorite things to do, we said that that was a beginning, but he had to keep thinking, had to keep coming up with some more things, some more ways to make restitution to her, and it's never happened again. And he was then and is now one of the most compassionate people. So I think it fell into with him that I think it just came out and it worked and he got a reaction. And I think he was playing around with power, I think. I don't know. And fortunately, he was caught. And the ramifications were big enough that and harsh enough that he learned his lesson. So obviously, I don't want to believe that Rianne is right by that my son learned that behavior, because I certainly don't think he did. But and whether we succeeded at teaching him empathy, I don't know. But we did tried to talk about how this little girl was had felt and how she was frightened and how he had been frightened before, and how would he feel? But I'm not sure if it was we taught empathy or we just taught that there were consequences. Either way, the behavior stopped. So thoughts on that one, Brooke?
I love both of those ideas, the making it very community and saying you're not getting away with this, bringing it into the light. I think that was a great idea. I love how you are talking to your son about making restitution. I also think that there can be times where kids simply don't know how to get what they want or get what they need or express themselves, maybe because they are delayed socially, maybe they are just emotionally upset about something. I have an incident with a child who put a pretty threatening note for a small child into another child's locker, and the school called and we discussed, and turns out that really the child was just frustrated that this slightly older child wouldn't play with him and didn't know how to express that well. Mm-hmm. And so when we could then kind of coach on how to express yourself and how then do we need to, heal this relationship. And so finding out what's going on with them and also, all of those other parts about what is socially acceptable, what is going to work for you and not work for you, what are the consequences of negative behavior, and, we are not going to allow certain things to occur.
Yeah, and then what I liked about that is that you looked behind to try to understand why the child, partly it could be a matter of simply wanting to have dominance, but in the case you described, and I think so often the case, is there something going on underneath. And it may just be the need for attention. It may be other things, but it's worthwhile digging and not just assuming that the bullying child is a bad kid or just a mean kid or whatever. You are listening to Creating a Family talk about adoption and infertility. We primarily keep in touch with our audience through our weekly e-newsletter. We have one a week for adoption. You can sign up at the top of any page, top right-hand side of any page of our website. We let you know about the latest developments in adoption, and we also let you know about the upcoming week's show topic, so you can submit your questions like some of the people have today. We'll let you know so you can submit your questions in advance and perhaps get your question read on air as well. I did want to talk about two specific instances that we had people ask about that I think are worth assessing, because they are, I don't know if they're more common, but let's start with cyberbullying. That is a real issue, and when kids can get online, and quite frankly, kids are getting online at younger and younger ages. Children are being given phones at younger and younger ages. And even though a lot of these social networks have an age requirement, I notice that a lot of parents do not enforce it. So let's talk specifically, Brooke, if you want to begin on that one, on cyberbullying and what we mean by that, and if you know anything about it as far as its prevalence or its destructive nature.
Well, I am just glad that my son is not there yet and barely aware of social media. That is such a complicated thing for parents to manage. And I'm happy that I have some time to learn from other people before I have to deal with it all of the time. I think there are some basic things we need to do about monitoring our children for their safety and for appropriate behavior. I have a friend, actually, who once grounded her child from Facebook for using incorrect grammar and said that, you know, this is something that's serious and we're going to make sure that you present yourself well and explain things very well.
Lord, you should not read any of my, I don't want her to read any of my posts because my grammar's not always perfect, but okay.
But
maybe
the lesson was that this stuff lasts forever, and be aware of what you are posting and how you are presenting yourself, and, you know, kind of coming in early so that the kids do kind of take it seriously. Beyond monitoring and being aware of what's going on, having conversations with kids so that they can know that you are open to talking about it and they can share things with you. And then I would, you know, bring up conversations. Have you ever had this, or I heard about this? You can tell them real stories or you can make them up just to see what's going on with your kids. And if those kinds of things are happening in their peer groups, even if they're not involved with them.
And they may be more likely to talk about it if it's something happening to other people and they're not involved.
Right.
What about requiring your children to friend you when they get on, whatever the friend being the general term, it changes by social media, but for their when they get on. Debbie, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, my personal thoughts is, you know, an affirmative yes. There, the whole media thing is so fast-paced and changing and kind of out of control that sometimes parents just put up their hands in, you know, despair. And I don't think it was quite the same as in an earlier generation where, they're just sitting in front of the TV with 12 channels to choose from that are censored already on some level. You know, the Internet is complete open book to so many things that prey on children's vulnerabilities, and social media as well. You know, there's so much documented. And there's something about the anonymity of it that emboldens, even between peers, emboldens them to say things they would never say face-to-face. We're losing the art of conversation. Our children aren't learning the ways, the subtleties of how to interact interpersonally in a way that's kind and caring and complex, that you resolve conflicts when you have them versus escalating them, that can so easily happen on social media because there's this distance and this anonymity that you can create. So I do definitely think parents need to be much more involved than there's a tendency to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. The if our kids are determined to get around us, the truth is they probably can. But
yeah,
the more involved you are, and also this goes back to just strengthening the basic relationships we have with our children, I think that's very important. But also, I mean, to the extent we can, staying involved in our children's social media life as well. I agree with you. Well, here's one that will harken back to any of us that rode the school bus, bullying on the school bus. Here's a question from Phyllis. She said, great timing for this show. Our school starts next Monday. I have two kids, and they will ride the bus for the first time. It almost seems like a rite of passage to experience bullying on the school bus. It's hard to find someone who didn't experience this to some degree. I want to prepare my kids, but I don't want to scare them, and I don't want them to be wimps, if you know what I mean. All right, Debbie, let's talk about the age-old tradition of school buses and bullying. And I guess that kind of brings us back to what rises to the level. Is taunting on the school bus by the older kids, is that bullying? Because that certainly does happen. And how do we help our kids without scaring them and also empowering them not to be wimps? Thoughts on that, Debbie?
I do remember myself riding the school bus for the first time and being teased. Mm-hmm. That was in middle school.
Middle school, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have great advice on that. I mean, I think one good thing would be to get to know the bus driver, to create a relationship with the bus driver and have a rapport and communication around what happens on the bus, and that you introduce your child to the bus driver and that they feel an ally in the ultimate authority on the bus. Also finding a friend, helping them find a friend that they can sit with each day, see if there's a way to get to school and find out who else is on the route that you might know or might be in their class. I think allies is really an important part of navigating the world, having friends and people that you trust, that you can go to, that you feel safe and partnered with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and for children just beginning to ride, sit near the bus driver. Try to get, if there aren't assigned seats, if there are assigned seats, try to get your child assigned relatively close. And if not, encourage your child to sit near the bus driver, at least at the beginning until they get their sea legs. Any thoughts on school buses as far as territory for bullying, Brooke?
I actually never rode a bus to school, so I haven't had that experience, which is, of course, unusual. I would encourage at least the person who asked the question to let the children be advocates for each other and not just have friends, but, you know, this is what you need to do when things are going on with your sibling. And then also helping them be prepared that people say a lot of things and they're going to have to let it roll off their back sometimes, and knowing kind of what that line is. I would personally, and not, maybe not everyone would agree with this, but use the example of talking to my child about, you know, sometimes when you are very upset and you are throwing a fit, would be the word we would use, mom doesn't respond to everything that you say. And sometimes when people are very upset, they say a lot of words that they don't always mean. And sometimes we just ignore those for right now. And if it really is bothersome to you, then come home and tell mom about it. But you don't have to address everything on that moment, which may just kind of exacerbate the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And some kids are constitutionally more able to ignore than others. and I had one of my children to a certain extent, but certainly when she was younger, had the hardest time ignoring other behavior, and we would talk with her about it, and I was riding with her in the car, and she had a friend who was doing something that was annoying her, so she started screaming at her friend, ignore, 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 and I was like, oh, gosh. Oh, we have a ways to go with this one, including how exactly to ignore. But that brings us to some of the classic advice that we tell children for handling bullies, and one of them is, just ignore it. So, Brooke, how effective is that for a technique for children for handling bullies or behavior that may be approaching bullying?
It really depends on the situation. In the school bus situation, they may simply be walking by someone and not have to then deal with them much after that. So that's a good time for ignoring them. If a potential bully is seeking attention or enjoying the reactions that they get, then ignoring the behavior may exterminate it pretty quickly. I think that's why we tend to go with that first and try that and hope that it eliminates the problem. Unfortunately, there are other reasons that people are bullying, other situations, and they're just going to keep trying.
And it won't always work. So what I'm hearing, and what I'd like for this is the rest of the show we're going to be talking about, is building up an arsenal of responses that we can utilize with our kids and empower our kids to think through what their options are and which one might work best in this situation. Okay, so just ignore it is a great first step to see if that helps. Another thing that we often will tell children is they're probably jealous. You'll say, you know, so-and-so is picking on me, and a classic parental response is, ignore it, they're just jealous. So, Debbie, any thoughts on that? I mean, that could be a reason why they're doing it. Jealousy is possible. That's possible. That is a possible reason. How effective do you think that would be?
To say that to yourself? Was that your question?
No, say it to your child, so your child can internalize it. But yeah, not to yourself, but to your child. Yeah, help your child think through the reasons.
I mean, I think it could be one. Wow, that's a difficult one, because sometimes if it really is a bullying situation where they are pointing out a weakness or an apparent weakness, sometimes it kind of is a minimization of that to a child. So let's say they're teasing them about adoption or something, and you say, oh, they're just jealous of being adopted. Well, is that really true? You know, maybe
yeah.
it is, maybe it isn't. Or,
Probably.
You know, yeah, or, you know, that I mean, yeah, I think that probably has limited use
yeah.
and could be minimizing the point of vulnerability for the child and the pain that it causes to poke at that. So I would use that one cautiously or
you know,
only truthfully.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's helpful in the sense of thinking through why somebody is doing it in that sense, trying to, you know, give them some abilities to think through what's the reason. But I
right.
kind of agree
well,
with
I
you.
Think that is helpful to try to create empathy
yeah.
for your child. If someone, you know, if there is a situation where you end up learning something about the other child, that not to try to help your child have an arsenal back to their vulnerabilities, but to create empathy of, you know, life is kind of hard for them right now and school is rough, and so they sometimes they, in order to feel better about themselves, they put down other people. I don't think they ultimately want that. They probably ultimately want a friend. So, you know, what could we do differently that helps break that down? You know, schools are communities that go on for years, and just stopping a bully or isolating a bully doesn't necessarily fix things in the long term. Creating restorative practices, or like you were talking about, restitutions in ways that bring that child back into the community in a positive sense that builds them up, is to the benefit of everyone. The bullying stops and the child feels included and doesn't need to lash out. So thinking broadly as parents about, you know, this is a long story, can sometimes be helpful. And I have seen that happen in my own children's lives where, you know, a little girl that was very mean to my daughter early on in, like, first grade, I was just so delighted when she invited her to her sixth grade birthday party that the story had slowly but surely turned around, not just for her, but for this child in general in the school community, and that was such a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, and good for your daughter to hopefully see that things can change and that we can affect change
yes.
if, in fact, she had anything to do with it. Well, here is a response from Walt. He says, dealing with the bully is quite easy, really. Walk up to him, punch him right in the face. He might want to fight at that point, but he won't be able to fight you again the next day. He won't want to fight you again the next day. Bullies only pick on those who do not respond in kind. So, I mean, it's a I think this is particularly probably with our boys, this is a not atypical response. Walt, then when I went back and commented that this is effective for a limited number of, you know, you've got to have the physical strength, you've got to, you know, not end up being the one who's going to get creamed, he came back and said that as a child he didn't have the physical strength. He was a smaller child, but that by being plucky and by not putting up with it, it stopped the bully. So he feels very strongly that this was a very effective technique for dealing with bullies. Brooke, thoughts on that?
Well, while I have said that I, in some ways, admire the ability of males in general to punch each other and get over things, and that it's slightly more complicated for women, this just isn't something we can encourage
for children in schools these days. I don't know any school that would tolerate that. In fact, I had a parent who read this book tell me that his first grader was being pushed around by a fourth grader, and the first grader took a swing at the fourth grader, and they tried to suspend the first grader.
Yeah, and I tell you, it's nuts now. I mean, we really have gone too far, which is, it's, although nobody wants to see, you know, fighting in the schools, but it does, yeah. So you raised such a good point, and one I really had not thought about, and that is there are consequences now, and particularly in a school setting, for, yeah, that's such a good point, taking any type of physical thing, even if it is deserved. Yeah. Darn. Because sometimes,
now,
it
I will
would
say
feel really
parent.
Good to tell your kid, I'll just punch him. But not that I would say that, just saying it might feel good. Or to do it yourself, trip the little kid, you know. But all right, so basically from your standpoint is the ramifications to the child being bullied are, is too strong for them to take Walt's suggestion.
It's certainly not on school grounds. That would be very dangerous for them. And even if they do it off school grounds, there's likely to be a report to school, and it, the school can still act on that.
Yeah. All right. So, darn. You know, that's a, that would be so rewarding at times. But I'm probably sharing more than I should right now. All right. So, let's see.
And there may be a little bit of romanticizing of a bygone day of how well or effective that actually was, you know.
Well, you know, I wonder that, too. Although it's funny, when I have talked with, and you're correct that it's almost always men, but when I this weekend was in a situation where I was around other people and somebody said, oh, what's the topic of the show this week? And I said, bullies. And it was surprising to me the number of men who said, "Oh, I that's how I handled it, you know, or I punched the guy, or I pushed him off his bike, or you know, things like that." That it really got me thinking a bit about, you know, I wonder if that was a bygone day, or if it, I don't know, maybe it still happens some and just doesn't get, you know, outside the school setting. I did wonder if there was maybe a little romanticizing that was going on. With these men now, yeah, and not quite sure how effective it was at the time. Perhaps it was. You are listening to Creating a Family, talk about adoption and infertility. Today we're talking about coping with bullies. I wanted to take this moment to remind you that this show is brought to you by the generous support of our gold sponsors who believe in our mission of providing unbiased education and support to pre- and post-adoptive families. Some of our wonderful gold sponsors include Hopscotch Adoptions. They are a Hague-accredited adoption agency placing waiting children from around the world, offering home study and post-adoption services to residents of North Carolina and New York. We also have the law offices of James Fletcher Thompson. They are a South Carolina firm committed to adoption and assisted reproductive law. And we have Children's Connection, Inc. They're an adoption agency with offices throughout Texas providing domestic infant adoption, embryo donation adoption, home studies, and post-adoption support to families throughout the United States. And Nightlight Christian Adoption. They have been helping children connect with loving families for more than 50 years. Nightlight now has offices from coast to coast providing international, domestic, foster, and embryo donation and adoption services through its Snowflakes Embryo Adoption Program. All right. I'd like to talk now about techniques. I had mentioned earlier that it seems like our best approach is to arm our kids with an arsenal of potential options for dealing with bullies. Help them assess, and if we're involved, be able to help them assess of which of these techniques might work. Brooke, we mentioned before that just ignoring it is certainly a valid technique and perhaps a good beginning one, depending on the nature of the bullying, how far it's gone, and as what we can determine as to the cause. What are some other techniques that you would recommend for kiddos who are experiencing bullying?
Well, Of course, I like to let the kids brainstorm and test out ideas on their own, thinking about what they can do, whether it is to enlist the help of a peer, to walk away and play somewhere else, if it's to talk to an adult about it, how they I want them to talk through how they handled it, how the people around them handled it, how they wish it had been handled, and what they would do or want done differently in the future, so that we can kind of create a full plan for them.
Okay, and some of the suggestions, having the children or having the child brainstorm, and then if they don't come up with these suggestions, encourage them to, one, enlist the help of a peer. And I think Debbie had mentioned the creating allies, you know, on the school bus, making certain that, that they, your child has support. Children who are alone are more vulnerable than children in groups. Walking away, talking to an adult. Identify, and I would add to that, helping your child identify adults in different situations that they could tell if they're in the, if their teacher is not around and it's happening at school, who are some of the other adults, including, you know, like somebody who works in the cafeteria, things like that. Debbie, any other ideas, any other things you'd like to add to our arsenal of responses?
Good question. Yeah.
Well, let me ask one in specific.
Go ahead.
One in specific that it's not really Walt's idea of punching him in the nose, but the standing up to the bully, that takes such courage. It just takes such immense courage to do. But is there a place for that?
Yeah, I mean, there probably is, and maybe role playing with the parent of either witty responses or just self-assured responses that you can say and walk away, trying to, you know, in contrast to the punching in the nose thought, ways that aren't necessarily returning, you know, eye for eye, you know, trying to think of, you know, think ahead of what kind of responses you could have.
And help me think through some responses to the your daughter's experience of the taunt of "Oh, you're adopted," as a intended as a put down. What type of responses? Not to put you on the spot, because I can think of some too. What type of responses, if you remember any, that you helped your daughter come up with?
Well, that was an interesting situation, but I'll, you know, one that they could say would be, "Oh, yes, I am, and are you?" Or "I am, and so what?" You know, just to, like, you know, just like with a punch, if you resist a punch, it hurts worse. If you absorb it and go with it, then it loses its power. And so in that particular situation, she actually asked me to help the school broaden their curriculum around bullying and what was included in that. And adoption was not part of the conversation. You know, there was gender identity, there was racial identity, there was family constellation, but adoption was not in the conversation. And so I ended up doing education in her classes that she wanted me to do around what is adoption and why is it not okay to taunt people around that. And it was super powerful. I was so surprised.
Yeah, what a great idea, and it would be powerful. One that has been reported a couple of months ago by one of our in our support group, whose daughter was being teased about being adopted, and her daughter responded, "At least my parents chose me. Yours got stuck with you." Now, yes, that may not be the nicest thing, and it was interesting because some of the people were pointing out that that in itself was an unkind response. But in response to being teased, it gave this little girl power, and it shut the other kid down. So I don't know whether that's a proper thing to encourage. But in this case, it had a good outcome in that the other kid was shut down, and this little girl felt empowered. So I throw that out as a possibility as well. Brooke, some thoughts of other things that other responses that we could help our kids think through, or responses or witty comebacks, anything along those lines as well.
Well, I think it depends on your child and how they feel about the situation, and just kind of their personality too. You know, some kids can be a little more sarcastic and own that, and other kids may, you know, to the, well, you're adopted comment, may just be like, yeah. And
exactly. And this
right,
little
and just
girl
let
in
it
particular,
be.
Yeah, her mother shared that this little girl in particular was very spunky. So this was a, this comeback was very in keeping with her personality. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And for some kids, they would just be, yeah, blasé. They wouldn't even need to respond.
Right, and knowing, you know, I think the reason why some of these responses work, and I just loved Debbie's analogy about the punch, is that bullying is often about power and dominance, and so when you meet it, then, you know, yes, it could escalate. However, it's more likely they're just going to, oh, okay, and we're going to figure out how to work from here.
Well, and that comes back then to the standing up, to because so often it is about power. Therefore, if the other person doesn't allow themselves to be dominated, then it takes the then it's not the response that the bully wants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. Now, what about in situations where you're able to identify that there is, I think it's helpful if this is a recurring issue that is happening, and let's say it's happening in the school environment, to think through, try to analyze when the bullying is occurring, where the bullying is occurring, and come up with some specific strategies. I realize this is not always possible, that the bullying does not follow a pattern. But if it does, or if you can tell there is a place, the lunchroom or the school bus or whatever, where this bullying, what are parents' options then for working within the school? We'll start with you on that one, Debbie. Your example, by the way, was a great one of coming up with being allowed to do some teaching on a subject, which is, talk about the most effective way of working with the school. What are some other thoughts with working
with
the school?
I mean, I think, you know, just to back up a little bit, part of it is parents really being invested in their child's school, knowing their teachers, knowing their peers, knowing their friends, that if an issue comes up, they aren't suddenly the new parent storming the office around their child, but that they're off, you know, that there's relationships that are built, and that you're dealing with a problem in the context of relationship, which is so much more effective. Let's see, you know, sometimes bullying, when it actually is very severe bullying, it's happening in secret, and there's a fear element going on. And so if you find out about things that are pretty severe that have been kept secret and your child has been intimidated, then, you know, you do need to really elicit the administration and the teachers to try to find interventions. My school, you know, is very big on restorative practices where, you know, it does begin with addressing it with the child and their parents, et cetera, but then there is some sort of process for restoration and protection for the child, but also restoration of the relationship and returning of that child somehow positively to the community. I think the biggest thing is getting involved in the school from the get-go so that you're not unknown and your child's friends aren't unknown and who the kids that are potential bullies are known to you.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yes. I mean, don't let the first time you have any interaction with your child's teacher or school be when you're complaining about an act. Brooke, other thoughts on things that we can do as parents, either working with the school or working with our child, on ways to handle bullying?
Well, absolutely try to work with the school as much as possible, suggesting to them
some alternatives, that if this is happening on the playground, that the children or your child is given two or three different options on what they want to do during recess or whatever time that it is, seeing if the school is responsive. I also think as parents that we need to be prepared that if the school is not responsive or not appropriately responsive, maybe trying to loop all the kids in on one and say, you know, you all just need to get along better. And so the child being bullied now feels they're in trouble and is even more intimidated, that we as parents have to know, you know, what are we going to do? Is it that we, you know, try to take our kids out of the school or seek additional guidance from therapists who can then kind of also be an advocate with the school? I had a situation, you know, middle school is terrible for everyone, right? I hope so. And in middle school, I was at a very small private school and, of all things, was teased for being a cheerleader and kind of isolated because it's a small school and there were only a couple of cheerleaders, and so we were isolated. And the school didn't address it appropriately per my mother's desires, and she came to the point where she said, you know, you have to finish out the school year. And she didn't use this language, but basically I was allowed one mental health day a week. I had to keep my grades up, and if I needed to stay home and do my homework at home, then I did. And that's probably a pretty extreme reaction. However, you know, kept things smooth at school and kept me from,
but it also made you feel supported and heard.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, or I think that's how I would feel. I actually think it is a great response, assuming that you were able to keep your grades up and your mother was
luckily
in a situation.
I was.
Yeah, well, and your mother was in a situation that, or you were old enough to be left at home alone, or your mother was in a situation to be at home with you. I realize there are some families where that would be more problematic, but yeah. And and you know, you raised such a good point. I hadn't even thought about this, but the approach, and I've seen it done, where one child is being picked on, but rather than address the kid who is the bully, all the children are brought in and talked to as if it's a universal problem or a joint problem, and that feels so unsatisfactory. It would feel unsatisfactory if I were the person being picked on or as the parent of that child, that it's being addressed as a universal problem, not as a problem specific that this particular child is doing something wrong. Yeah. Yeah, that just makes me angry thinking about it. So,
well, we have to know the difference. I think my child had some occurrences last year that were more social struggles. And it wasn't necessarily bullying. However, people were saying mean things to each other. And that might have been a situation where you get the three kids that were involved together to sit down and work, hash through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe eventually by the end of the school year, they were all friends. I wouldn't have considered that a bullying case. However,
right,
if it had come to the point where it was just one or two kids against one, then I don't think the sitting down together is beneficial because they've already established a relationship of power. And so the child here doesn't have an equal footing for any kind of conversation.
Yeah, that's, and you make a good distinction, and it comes back to the thing we were talking about at the very beginning, is that not all acts of meanness or of teasing rise to the level, and that we as parents need to have the ability to sit back and assess that sometimes just letting it roll off your back is the appropriate response, and in other times it isn't, and we have to help our children and ourselves understand that distinction. That's such a very good point, and a good point for us to stop on. Thank you so much, Debbie Gish and Brooke Randolph, for being our guests today to talk about this very important subject. Let me say to our audience, if you have enjoyed the show and you want to help us grow, please do us a favor and give us a rating on iTunes. We are the top-rated show by far, actually, in the subject matter category, and we would like to keep our ranking there. This is also how iTunes knows how to recommend a show. So do us a favor, pop over there. It's super quick. You can give us a star rating, or you can give us, if you're particularly generous, an actual written comment, and we would appreciate either and or both. I know that our audience is going to want to get more information. and I know that they're going to want to buy this book. This is the book by Brooke Randolph. The title is The Bully Book, a workbook for kids coping with bullies. It is a workbook format. Children are encouraged to draw, and they're suggested questions. So it's a great book for helping your children. I would assume if your child is being bullied, or if you are in a situation where you think your child is a bully. To get more information about Brooke or about the book, you can go to her website, brooke-randolph.com. To get more information about Debbie Gish, you can go to the website of Adoption Connection, the adoption agency that she works for, and that website is adoptionconnection.org. That is adoptionconnection.org. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I will see you next week.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right. Save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good. Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.